Shabbos daf chaf. So the Mishnah had said that you can only roast meat on Erev Shabbos if there'll be time for it to be roasted by Shabbos. So how much does it have to be roasted before Shabbos, the Gemara asks. So Rav says, as much as it has to be roasted enough, like the meat of Ben Drosai, which was about a third of the way cooked. Rabbi Yochanan says on the same topic that any food that's cooked to the point of Ben Drosai is not chayev for food cooked by a non-Jew if he comes and cooks it further, meaning once it's cooked that much, the amount of Ben Drosai, then even if a non-Jew comes and cooks it more, that would not fall under the isser of eating food cooked by a non-Jew. We have a brisa that Hananya says that food cooked to the level of Ben Drosai, you can leave that on top of your stove on Shabbos, even if the coals haven't been swept or banked, meaning you didn't get rid of the coals on the stove because, you know, we're worried that you're going to stir the coals. But if it's already cooked to the level of Ben Drosai, then that is fine. Rabbi Elazar, our Mishnah says that the bottom of the bread has to crust over before Shabbos. So what is considered the bottom? Is the bottom, back in the day when they would cook bread, they would stick it to the sides of the stove, of the oven, sorry. And so is the bottom the part that's attached, that's stuck to the side of the oven? Or is it the side that's facing the fire? Meaning if you're looking at it, it would be kind of the top based on, you know, where it's stuck to the side of the oven. So what's considered the bottom facing the fire is stuck to the side of the oven. And we bring in an answer that Rabbi Elazar himself says that the side stuck to the oven has to crust over before Shabbos. So the Mishnah said that you can lower the Korban Pesach into the oven on Erev Shabbos. Why is this different from regular meat that for roasting regular meat that you can't do it on Erev Shabbos unless there's time to finish it before Shabbos? Why do we just allow you to roast the Korban Pesach? Because there are many members of the group for the Korban Pesach, so they're all going to stay on top of each other and make sure none of them adjust the oven or the coals or anything like that. However, this seems to imply that if it's not for this reason, it would be usser. However, we learned that by kid meat, it's mutter. You're allowed to roast it going into Shabbos if it's in a sealed or even in an unsealed oven. So why is this Korban Pesach any different? The answer is that by that case of the kid meat, the meat is all cut up. So therefore, since it's cut up, the draft will be bad for it. So you're not going to want to open up the oven and start poking around in there and messing with the coals, because if the draft hits it, it's going to be bad. However, here, by the Korban Pesach, the meat is not cut up, so a draft won't affect it, so you're more likely to come to open the oven. But since you have a big group, you're not going to. So the Mishnah said that you can light a fire in the fire chamber of the Beis HaMikdash. So the fire chamber was basically what the Kohanim would light to stay warm. So how do we know this? Rav Huna says, because the Pasuk says, Lo sevaru esh bechol moshoseichem, that you shouldn't kindle a fire in any of your dwellings. So you can't, it's coming to teach that you can't light a fire in your dwellings, but you can in the Beis HaMikdash. However, Rav Chisda says, if this is true that you can light a fire, then you should even be able to do it on Shabbos itself. Why does the Mishnah only allow you to light this fire on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos? So rather, that pasuk is not teaching that. That pasuk is teaching that you're allowed to burn the sacrificial parts and fats, part of the karbanos, on Shabbos. However, the reason you're allowed to light a fire on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos is because the Kohanim they'll all be careful that they're not going to adjust the fire on Shabbos. They'll all make sure they're, you know, not adjusting the fire, and they'll all be very careful. So outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnah says that you need enough time for the fire to catch on to most of the wood before Shabbos. So what's considered most of the wood? Rav says it's the majority of every log. And Shmuel says that the fire is, you know, it's going well. The fire is enough that you won't have to add more wood to it because it's burning well enough. Rav Chia brings in a brisa to support Shmuel that the fire must be lit so that the flame rises on its own and that they won't have to add more wood to it before Shabbos. So regarding lighting one piece of wood, what's the halacha? Rav says the fire must ignite most of the thickness. The fire has to be burning most of the thickness of the log. But there are some that teach Rav as saying not the thickness, but it must light most of the circumference of the log. And Rav Papa says, since we have both conflicting statements, we have to go by both, that it has to light both the thickness and most of the circumference. And this we see this in a Machlokas Tanaim, that Rav Chia says you need time for the wood to be ruined, enough time for the wood to be ruined for the work of a craftsman, which means that the majority of the thickness has to be burnt before Shabbos. And Rav Yehuda ben Becerra says that the fire has to catch on to two sides of it before Shabbos, meaning the circumference. And he brings a pasuk as proof for that. So we have a pasuk that says, Vez ha'ach lefanav mivo eres. So what does the word ach mean in that pasuk? Rav says it means achvana, and they weren't sure what that meant until they saw someone was selling achvana, and they looked at it, and it was willow. So that's what the word ach means according to Rav. And Shmuel says it's talking about a pyre, like a fire, but a pyre where meaning like a bonfire, basically. So this pyre where the large pieces are ignited from the smaller pieces, and you basically you light the smaller pieces, which make the fire bigger, and they light up the larger pieces. Ravuna says that if you have a fire that's made of loose reeds, you don't need the fire to catch on to most of them before Shabbos. However, if they're all tied up, you do need the fire to catch on to most of them, because since they're tied up where it's, you know, there could be pockets of air and things like that, so the fire won't catch. But when they're just loose and the reeds are very flammable, you know that they're going to all catch on fire. And similarly, if you have a fire of dried date pits, then you don't need the fire to light most of them before Shabbos because they're very flammable. However, if they're in a basket where there are pockets of air and they're spread out, then there's room to be worried that they might not all light on fire before Shabbos. However, and then you might come to adjust it. Rav Chisda says that the opposite makes a lot more sense. By the loose reeds, they can all scatter, and then the fire is not going to be, you know, the fire is not going to light, and you might come to adjust it on Shabbos. However, if they're all tied together, then they're not going to scatter, and it's all going to burn up very quickly. Similarly, with the loose pits, they might scatter, the loose date pits. However, if they're all in a basket, they won't scatter. And he quotes Rav Kahana, who says that if you have loose reeds, you don't require the majority, but if they're tied together, you do require the majority. So this does go like Rav Huna. However, the second part where he says, if you have loose pits, loose date pits, then we do require, in that case, the majority of them to be on fire before Shabbos. However, if they're in a basket, you don't require the majority. And this one goes like Rav Chisda. Rav Yosef brings in a braisa that says you don't need the majority of, for these things, you don't need the majority of it to catch on fire before Shabbos, for pitch, for sulfur, for cheese, and for grease. And there's a braisa that adds also straw and stubble, because again, these are all things that light very quickly. Rav Yochanan says Babylonian wood also does not need the majority of it to be on fire before Shabbos. Rav Yosef says, what is Babylonian wood? Well, he can't be talking about thin strips of wood, because Ula says that you have to wait for most of a wick to light on fire. So if you have to wait for most of a wick, then all the more so for thin strips of wood, you'd have to wait for them to light on fire. So rather, he meant these branches of cedar. And Rami Bar Abba says he was talking about, Rabbi Yochanan was talking about moss. Hadron Allah Yitzios HaShabbishkech, on finishing the first parak. The Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak of Shabbos, Vameh Madlikin Uvameh Ein Madlikin. What can we light with on Shabbos for the Shabbos candles, and what can we not use to light with for the Shabbos candles? Meaning the candles, what are we allowed to use in terms of their wicks and their oil? What are the things that we can use to light the Shabbos candles? So it starts off saying all the things that we can't use as wicks. You can't use cedar bast, uncarded flax, floss silk, willow bast, desert fiber, or sea moss. And you can't use these things as fuels for your Shabbos candles. You can't use pitch, wax, keek oil, oil that must be burnt, fat from a sheep's tail, and you can't use tallow. Nachum Amadi says you can use boiled tallow. The Chachamim say that you're never allowed to use tallow. Sligamar. So I just translated what all the things in the Mishnah are, but really we relied on the Gemara to explain what all these things are. So just going through the Mishnah using the Hebrew words, the Gemara says, what's lechesh? The first thing that it says, that's bark of a cedar tree. However, we say that's just wood. Obviously, that can't be turned into a wick. So we answer that, no, we're not talking about the bark itself. We're talking about the woolly substance that's in the bark. Chosan, what's that? Rav Yosef says, that is toe of flax. However, Abai says, we have a pasuk that says, vaya chosan lina'oros, lina'oros, that the strong shall become as toe. And the word chosan and toe are used as two separate words in this pasuk. So if chosan, so clearly chosan doesn't mean toe, because here it means strong. So you can't say that chosan means toe, so or the tau. So rather, Abaye says that the chosan is flax, which its stems have been beaten, but its fibers have not been combed. What's klach in the Mishnah? Shmuel says that he asked a lot of seafarers, and they said that its name is kulcha, which is this woolly substance that's found on the stones in the sea. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Ze'iri says it's floss silk. Abaye and Ravin were sitting with Ravna Nechemia, who is the brother of the Reish Galusa, and Ravin said to Abaye, oh, look at that garment he's wearing. That silk garment that he's wearing is the klach of our Mishnah. However, Abaye says, no, that's parnada silk. That's not klach. We have a braisa that says that garments made from regular silk, from klach, and from colored silk are chayav and tzitzis. And the point in this is that it makes a distinction between klach and regular silk. So this is a disproof to Ravin, because clearly klach is not regular silk. However, it's possible to just say, yeah, regular silk is separate from parnada silk, which is klach. That klach and regular silk are two different things. But what the Reish Galusa's brother, Rabbi Nechemiah, was wearing was klach. So what's Psilas Ha'idan? That's willow tree. Ravin and Abaye were walking through the forest, I guess, and they saw a willow tree. And Ravin said to Abaye, oh, this is the Psilas Ha'idan that the Mishnah is talking about. And Abaye says, what are you talking about? This is just wood. Again, you can't use that to make wicks. So Ravin showed him the woolly substance that was inside the bark and said, no, this is the Psilas Ha'idan. So what's the Psilas Hamidbar? That's nettle. What's the Yiroka Shalpnei Amayim? This means like the green that's on the water. So what does that mean? So it seems like it might be algae. However, it can't be algae because algae is easily crumbles and you can't turn that into a wick. So rather it's moss. A brisa, we bring in a brisa that adds wool and hair to the Mishnah's list of things that can't be used as wicks. However, our Mishnah didn't include wool because it curls up and hair burns very quickly. So meaning both of these wouldn't really be good wicks. You can't use them as wicks. So that's why our Mishnah didn't include them. The Mishnah also says Zephes and Shava. Zephes is pitch, Shava is wax. And we have a brisa that says until moss, we were talking about things that are not allowed to be used as wicks. After moss, we're talking about things that can't be used as oils. However, this is very obvious. We know what can be used as wicks and the things that can't be used and the things that are talking about oils. We know the difference. So why does it have to say that? Why do we need that brisa to teach us that? So we needed that brisa to say that wax is coming as an oil because it comes after the moss. So we needed it to teach that wax in our Mishnah is coming as an oil, because you might have thought that you can't even use wax candles, but no, you're allowed to use wax as a candle. This brisa is teaching you that you can't use wax as an oil. Rami Bar Avin says that itrina is the residue of pitch and wax is the residue of honey. All right, great. Why do we need to know that? For the purposes of buying and selling, that we know the names of these things and what they're called. Shker.